It's time for another episode of The Scoop. Get ready to talk Temple Athletics with John DiCarlo, Kyle Gauss, Matt Vender, and Dalton Balthaser.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Season 3, Episode 31 of The Scoop. I'm Dalton Balthaser, joined by my weekly Wednesday can't-miss prospects, Matt Vender and John DiCarlo. How's it going?
It's going well. Excited to be here today.
That's a draft reference,
yes,
right? We've kind of forgotten that the NFL draft is coming up. It's what a Super Bowl does, but I don't know if I'd be a can't-miss prospect. Maybe I'm a undrafted rookie free agent, gets into camp.
Similar to like a Sharif Finch type of deal?
Maybe.
Not necessarily maybe NFL, Finch. Just a prospect in life.
Prospect in life? Maybe a sneak into the fourth or fifth round.
Maybe.
Wouldn't it be weird to have somebody just write a capsule about you, like strengths and weaknesses, and sitting there just reading it and be like, oh my gosh, they really cut to the core of me. They're right. I can't argue with it. I don't know.
Just ask me like deep questions like the NFL owners and executives do to these prospects and just try to wear them down.
Yeah. I'd probably be really indecisive. Like, what kind of tree would you be? Like, oh, that's a great question. Give me a second on that.
Like the interview questions, like, if you know, what part of the salad would you be? You know, would you be
that's
the bowl?
One of the questions.
I've heard that.
Huh.
Would you be the lettuce? Would you be the salad? I mean, the bowl? Would you be the dressing? You know?
I don't know.
I choose not to answer that question.
Dressing kind of makes the salad, so.
Yeah. I probably have too much.
And it brings it all together. So.
Yeah.
We got a lot coming up in the show. We're gonna talk a little bit about a Temple recruit for basketball that they got today. You're going to hear this on a Thursday, so it'll be yesterday. We're going to talk with a former Temple Owl, Quincy Wadley, a part of the 1999 and 2001 Elite Eight teams, and then we'll get into the mailbag as always, but we'll get right into it with some Temple hoops talk. We just got the news today on a Wednesday, you guys will hear it on a Thursday, that James Scott, Kennesaw State transfer, is going to be coming to Temple. What does that mean for the Owls? And it's kind of maybe a good grab for Aaron McKee and his start here at Temple.
It's a good sign for Temple and Aaron McKee as they make this transition. I know when we talked about the awkwardness that this transition could bring, but hey, you know, they came away with a recruit now. I guess we're sitting here about 2 weeks after they made the announcement. So they got a pretty good transfer guard here, a guy that's going to be able to play 2 years for them after sitting out next season. He will have to sit out next season, but, you know, Shiz Austin will be a senior next year, and Quentin Rose could very well end up leaving a year early for the NBA draft. As Scott was aware of and told me. So I think Temple's kind of laid that out for him and said, hey, whether Quentin Rose is back for his senior year or not, I think there's going to be an opportunity for him to really be a ball-dominant guard, a guy who could score 15-plus points a game. He averaged 17 a game last year, shot about 41% from the floor, 34% from three. So he's a guy who can score and put the ball in the basket, and you know I think they need some guards like him. This is definitely a good get for them, and I think right now it's a good sign at the beginning of the Aaron McKee transition era. Him and Chris Clark really took the lead on this one, and they got him over some other programs, Dayton, Nevada, Virginia Tech, some other schools were involved. So this is definitely a good get for Temple.
Yeah, I agree, and it's important because again we've talked about the potential awkwardness, the whole head coach and waiting thing. So, you know, who handles recruiting, who doesn't? And we've said if you're a fan that's looking forward to the Aaron McKee era, when Matt talked to Scott, he told them that, you know, I'm mostly talking to Coach McKee, Coach Clark and Coach McKee. I haven't really talked to Coach Dunphy. Again, with all due respect to Fran, that's probably a good thing you want to hear. So it sounds like they went about this the right way, making Aaron the face of 2019 recruiting and beyond. You get a kid who, like Matt said, is a ball-dominant guard, can really fill it up, can really score. This is a kid who's transferring up. You got him over Virginia Tech. You know, initially, again, things are fluid with recruiting. I wasn't sure if he's going to take the Dayton visit, take the Nevada visit. But to wrap that up, that's a great sign for him. It gives him some sort of buzz. It, honestly, it gives the fan base something else to talk about instead of sitting on their hands and saying, does this make sense? Does this not make sense? They got a guy who, I believe he told you, Matt, that he was looking forward to sitting out, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he thinks it could benefit him because of the fact that they will have Shiz gone and potentially Quentin Rose gone as well.
Yeah, so, I mean, again, great news. You're looking for some sort of dose of medicine that gives you an idea of, like, what the future could look like. So they hosted this guy on a visit, an unofficial visit, then an official visit. It's a guy that was a high priority for him, and they got him. That's a great thing for Aaron McKee to start off his career here as a recruiter.
Another guy Temple's kind of been looking at is St. Bonaventure transfer Isaiah Brockington. Any updates on his status? Will he be coming in for a visit here at Temple? Any interest there?
Well, a guy that a couple people I talked to actually this week told me that they could be getting a visit from Brockington. Whether he definitely is or not, I don't know. Whether, again, we're recording this on a Wednesday, whether today's developments change that, I'm not sure. I think he's a really intriguing name. He was a pretty good player at Archbishop Ryan. I believe he was going to go to a prep school. And then Mark Schmidt at St. Bonaventure took him late in the game. Had some good games for him this year. At one point, he played, I think, a ton of minutes in a game against Maryland. He had 20 points against TCU earlier in the year. And then Schmidt tightened up his rotation. But, you know, Jalen Adams was the A-10 player of the year. So he was playing behind a couple of really good guards. He's a lefty. I think he's about 6'4", 6'5". He's got a good shooting stroke. He's really athletic. A guy that I talked to that's familiar with his game said he's really tough. When he was at Ryan, he was known to really stay late, get a bunch of shots up in the gym. Again, if I know it sounds cliche, who wouldn't want tough players? Who wouldn't want hardworking players? Everybody does. But another person I talked to about his game said, yeah, he'd be a really good fit at Temple. Again, another guy who wants to transfer up. Penn State could be involved. Temple could be involved again. I have not been able to confirm if he's definitely going to visit. Someone who's close to him said, yeah, Temple will definitely get a visit if they want one. Again, I don't know how the James Scott things development changes things. I don't know if Aaron McKee says we're good with one transfer, or if he says no, we'll take both guys. Because now you've got the 2019 class to think about. There are a lot of guys they like in 2019 and 2020 and beyond. So again, I don't know if that takes him out of the mix, but I think he's a really intriguing name. Kyle had pulled this stuff. The stat up. In the six games that Brockington played in, where he played 20 or more minutes, he averaged 12.3 points, 2.5 assists, and 1.5 steals per game. So he looks like he works really hard on defense. He can play above the rim. Looks like he's got a pretty good shooting stroke. He's a guy who is a year younger than the rest of the people in his grade. So wherever he goes, sitting out a year will benefit him. So again, we'll see what's important to McKee. Obviously, for those who are unfamiliar with this process, we cannot talk to the current head coach. We can't talk to Fran Dunphy or Aaron McKee about any transfers, about any recruit, until they sign a national letter of intent. So hopefully Matt will get James Scott at some point between now and the next couple of days. And if there's something that brews with Brockington, we'll have more on that. But a name to potentially keep an eye on. But I think we'll be able to kind of read the tea leaves. If he releases a new list of schools and Temple isn't on it, maybe he decided, like, hey, they just got Scott, I'm gonna look somewhere else. Again, maybe Penn State. Somebody told me Villanova might be a long shot. I don't know if he's Villanova good, but I had a chance to randomly see him play a couple times this year, not in person, but just online. I think I might have been watching the game online, or they might have been on TV when he was playing St. Joe's. He looked good. Looks like a really, really tough kid, an intriguing prospect. But again, they have to balance out the numbers. How many guys we want to just look ahead on for four-year guys for 2019 and 2020 and beyond. But another name to keep an eye on.
All right, so the NFL draft is rapidly approaching, as it always does this time of the year. Obviously, there are a few Temple players out there. John and Matt, any specific players that you think could get drafted? Any guys on the cusp of getting drafted?
Well, the big two, I guess, would be Julian Taylor and Sean Chandler. Those are the two that I think have the best shot at getting drafted at some point. Beyond that, you look at guys like Keith Kirkwood, Adonis Jennings, Jacob Martin, Sharif Finch, Cole Boozer, Mike Jones as well. There are guys that I think will have chances at undrafted free agents. But, I think the two that you look at right now, Julian Taylor, it sounds like, from everything we've heard, it sounds like he's a virtual lock to be drafted. Where he falls probably could go anywhere from rounds 3 or 4 all the way to round 7. But and Sean Chandler, with that 40 time he ran at the combine, we'll see how that goes. But I would guess he'll be a later round pick as well, probably a third day pick. But those would be the two guys I look at, Julian Taylor and Sean Chandler. I don't know if John has anybody to add to that.
Yeah, I would think so. Julian's a really cool story. And he's visited 9 NFL teams during the offseason. We know by now these recover from injuries. He was the guy who really was kind of the forgotten guy. I don't want to say the forgotten guy, but I guess it was Adazio staff recruited Julian Taylor Buddy Brown. And Buddy Brown was a 3-star guy at the time. You'd hear varying reports of, like, did he get a Penn State offer? Did he not get a Penn State offer? Did he get one early in the game? But there was more buzz about Buddy Brown. Buddy Brown comes to Temple. Things never worked out. I think he eventually stopped playing due to injuries. Mm-hmm. He was a student assistant coach at one point. And yeah, I used to hear from a couple guys on the staff, like, man, if Julian Taylor can ever get healthy, we really like him. He's a good kid. He's smart. He works hard. And he got healthy. And things really came together for him. And there were a couple of, like, NFL personnel people who would come by during the season, and they would kind of say, yeah, we're kind of hoping he slips. Or we're kind of hoping that – they kind of joke around and say we're hoping that he's kind of like a well-kept secret. But at this point, nobody's really a well-kept secret. Everybody does their homework. And so if you're Temple and you're Jeff Collins and your whole goal is to obviously see these guys move on and do well in their careers, if you get two guys out of this draft and you can say, hey, we had two more guys drafted, even if Chandler is a sixth or seventh round guy – and Taylor is a fourth or fifth round pick. If you get two guys drafted, and you know, the rest of these guys, I'm sure, will end up in camps. I mean, I think Keith Kirkwood has played too well to not at least end up in somebody's camp. Even Adonis Jennings, Cole Boozer might end up in somebody's camp. I don't know. When I talked to Sharif Finch at the Cherry and White game, he said, he was like, yeah, my agents told me maybe anywhere from rounds 4 to 7, maybe he gets drafted, maybe he doesn't, but he'll probably end up in somebody's camp just because of, you know, he's a good athlete. Maybe he's a bit undersized to play in the NFL or play significant snaps in the NFL, but he blocked a heck of a lot of punts. He'll play special teams. Mike Jones was mentioned before he transferred to Temple as a guy who, I think it was McShay, right, said he could probably be drafted
in the 5th to 7th
round. Yeah, and, you know, he had a very much up and down, you know, grad transfer year at Temple. But, yeah, again, if they can get two guys drafted and the rest of the guys end up in camps, that's a pretty cool thing. But I think Julian Taylor would be a great story. Again, the guy's finally healthy. Everything really came together for him this year. I mean, he, on a good defense, he affected things just as much as anybody else. And it'll be interesting to see where Jacob Martin ends up as well. All right, so we're very excited to have a former Temple Owl, former Temple basketball player, one of the best players to come through the program. Quincy Wadley was a key member of those 1999 and 2001 Elite Eight teams. Excited to have him on the phone with us and on the scoop this week. Quincy, how you doing?
How you doing? How's everything?
Great, man. Awesome to have you on the show. Just first question, tell us what you're up to now. You're down in the D.C. area, right? And you're running something called ISBA Hoops. Why don't you just fill us in on what life looks for you, what life looks like for you right now and what you've been up to?
Well, I have a basketball academy, International Stars Basketball Academy. We are in D.C., in Northeast D.C., and we focus on education and athletics being that engine. Yes, we do basketball, skills development, training camps and clinics, but we also do other things with the kids in our program, and we try to use those initiatives to focus on education, because I'm also a dean at school during the daytime in D.C., so those things for me are paramount.
You said you're teaching or you're a dean at a school?
Yes, a dean, yep.
That's awesome. What's that like, too, just being involved in education now?
It's always been my life. I mean, that's what Temple is. It's, you know, it's education, it's world-class education, as well as athletics. And for me, it's just about continuing to do my part and give back. And that's by, you know, any way possible. You know, and we always talk about the kids are our future, but we got to invest in our children. So I'm just trying to continue to share the resources and things that were, you know, that I've accumulated along the way and the lessons that I learned, and try to pass it down to these next generation of kids we have coming.
And after after your playing career ended at Temple, you went on to play in Israel and some other stops as well. Just what can you tell us about your playing career and from the time you ended at Temple to the time you decided to stop playing basketball?
It was a great experience for me, getting to travel the world, playing in a lot of different countries, like you said, from Israel to, you know, to China. It was really a beautiful experience. And one of the things that never changed, no matter where I went along the way, no matter, you know, where my basketball destination took me, there was always those questions about Temple and Coach Chaney. So it's like these connections, you know, never die. And it was special to me that knowing how great of a man Coach Chaney was, and just to see and to understand that it wasn't just our culture, our country, that he, you know, impacted by the game of basketball. You know, these were other kids in other countries that didn't even speak our language. You know, that was one of those things about that was State Temple basketball and see these things. So that to me was special.
Those 1999 and 2001 Elite Eight teams were obviously memorable during your playing career. When you think back to your career at Temple, Quincy, what comes to mind?
I think we ushered in the right time. We were ushered in by the great basketball play of Rick Brunson and Aaron McKee and Eddie Jones. And, you know, coming in right behind that, I think we did a good job of carrying the torch, per se. But it was just a great time. We had a lot of great players. A lot of great players that was in our program that was very special. Hmm. But not just that, the city was in a good place at that time. They were behind us, they were supportive. Basketball has always been strong in Philadelphia, but at that time it was really a unique time for us. I think that was also the time that it was more entertainment got involved into college basketball. You know, we were ushering in, what else? Social media was just starting to take form and getting online and things like that. So it was a great time. It was really a great time for Temple basketball.
Quincy, let's talk a little bit more about that 99 team. That was the weird, you know, you guys lose in the A-10 tournament. Lamar Odom hits that shot. I think he hit it over Keaton Sanders, right?
Oh, Keaton Sanders. I've seen it in slow motion. I actually didn't play that entire tournament because
your hand injury, yeah.
Against UMass. Yeah, it was a broke head. Well, we tried to cover it up and say it was a sprain, but I actually broke my hand. But that year, that's the year we were actually picked to win a national championship.
Mm-hmm.
When we went on to get upset by Seton Hall later. But it was
2000, right? 99 was the year you guys went to the Elite Eight. 2000 was the Seton Hall, the game that everybody wants to forget.
Right.
With 99, right, exactly. You guys went on and eventually you lost to Duke. But what was it like? What I wanted to ask you was, you lose that game in the A-10 tournament. Odom hits that shot. Are you guys kind of just programmed as players to say, like, wow, that was hard, but we just got to pick? Obviously, you guys rebounded from it because you went on a really big run. But what was that tournament run like? And then you eventually come back and start playing again. What was that whole stretch like where you lose that game, but then you guys kind of bounce back from it and go on that run?
I mean, it was just a bump in the road for us.
Mm-hmm.
It was just pretty much like a bump in the road. We were already in a good stride before the tournament. And we're starting to play really, really well again,
mm-hmm.
as far as continuity-wise. So, I mean, hitting that shot from Lamar Odom was something that, you know what, it didn't spark us because we were already ready to go. That was just something that was more for them. That was their improbable run on their end. You know, they were hitting shots, and they go through the tournament and continue to play well. But we were already starting to play well. That was just something that was one of those one-game scenarios where we made a big play, hit a big shot, and it was from a great player. So, but for our standpoint, that was just a little hiccup. And like I said, we continued to get better, even as the season progressed after that tournament.
And in contrast, that 2001 team – didn't come in with the highest of expectations to go as far as maybe the 2000 squad. But what do you think about that 2001 squad? What do you think about it was that made you guys click? What was it that made that deep tournament run happen?
It was similar to the other years. I mean, when you have lead guards that have been in that position and have had that experience, we were experienced, and a lot of times the guards lead the way, like I said before. When you get in a tournament time, it's always about good guard play and things like that. So we were experienced guards all the way through. And that's the good thing about being at a program like that. We were in the tournament every year. We were always playing the top-level competition. We do Duke scheduled every year, Indiana scheduled every year. So we were tournament ready, you know, every time we were able to see those top teams. During that time, but that 2001 team was really Linda did a great job of stepping up and taking another huge step once Pepe graduated. So was, you know, the other players that left prior to that, which was the Lamont Barnes, guys like Ron Roberson stepped in and did a great job filling those voids. You know, doing a great job playing So it was like we really didn't let the beat. The experience was still there. You know, we still had, like I said, a lot of great guard play, and that's what, you know, later on tournament time in the season, that's what it's predicated on, the balls in the guard's hands a lot of times.
Quincy, one of the things I remember from covering you during that time, obviously you shot it really well in the NCAA tournament, but you were a very good defender. A lot of times, and we have a couple of questions from readers from our mailbag segment that we do, and a lot of people mention your name as one of the favorite players from that era. I remember you being a very good defender, and when we used to be able to sit courtside and hear stuff, I remember you being a pretty decent trash talker, too. You were able to kind of get in people's heads. I'm not going to ask you maybe to tell me what you would say all the time to people, but where did that come from? Was it a Harrisburg thing, just being tough? And do you maybe have a story about a time that you just completely got into somebody's head that was really good and just completely got them off their game? Because I would see the looks on their faces sometimes. They would just like shake their heads. It's almost as if to say, like, man, just shut up. Stop talking to me. You were very good at that. It used to make me laugh and smile. Talk about that part of your game and where that came from and any funny stories that come with it.
That's one of the things that I think comes from, like I said, that's a Harrisburg thing.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm sure that it's comparable to other kids from the inner city that came up in those type situations. It's just about being competitive.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're competing.
Mm-hmm.
And you're competing, so it's different facets and levels to the game. I can beat you mentally. I can beat you physically. Mm-hmm. I can beat you skill-wise.
Mm-hmm.
Me as a competitor, I'm trying to break down every part of your game.
Mm-hmm.
That's ironic that I was also, you know, a psychology major as well.
Yeah.
So, you know, for me, I was always strong-minded, and I love to always will myself through things. And I noticed most athletes and players, when they're in that competitive state, they don't have the mental fortitude to will themselves through certain situations against another great competitor.
Mm-hmm.
And they allow themselves to be baited.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like we talk about baiting, or they took themselves out of the game because they're not really full of confidence. And you have to be confident. The game is built on 85% confidence.
Mm-hmm.
You can work on skill all day long. If you don't have that confidence to believe that you can make those shots or be able to make those plays, then it won't happen. So I got a ton of stories about that, but I and I'll keep it simple, but that was what I enjoyed doing as well, just compete. But I remember we played Maryland University,
mm-hmm.
And we played them at the Lee Accord Center.
Yep.
And this was right after Maryland just beat Duke.
This is the game I'm thinking of. Yeah.
Right, they were riding high, so mm-hmm. they were coming in town.
Mm-hmm.
And believe Juan Dixon just had a great game against Duke.
Mm-hmm.
My buddy, my C1 out here too, doing his basketball program
mm-hmm.
With his kids, and I know he's coaching as well now
mm-hmm.
in college. But you know, a lot of people didn't realize that we always didn't play zone.
Mm-hmm.
There was times that we played man to man, and I would always draw the best offensive player.
Right.
And I remember that time I played Juan Dixon.
Mm-hmm.
They started to break down the zone a little bit, and we had to break down and play man-to-man. So I started guarding Juan Dixon,
mm-hmm.
and I can remember just being real physical with him.
Mm-hmm.
He couldn't get the ball, couldn't get a shot off, couldn't get come off a screen, and then I started moving the big man around. And I remember saying a few things to Terrence Morris.
Uh-huh.
You know, it was a few things I had to say to the big fella, and I made sure I shared it with him there while I'm doing that.
Would you actually like do your research and say like I'm gonna get him on this, or I know this about his family, I know like his girlfriend just broke up with him, like did you actually like do research ahead of time, be like I know I'm gonna get under his skin with this, or was it just like stuff?
That time was a little different. You weren't going to get online
right
and find out a guy's strengths and weaknesses. Now,
right,
a scouting report, and when you look at the scouting report, that's different.
Right.
Now it might be something that I might have seen or used from a scouting report.
Yeah, you'd be dangerous now. You'd be really dangerous now.
Your weakness.
Yeah.
And then use that to my advantage and talk about your weaknesses. So there was different ways, but I remember having some things for those two and let them know what was going to happen. And that was going to be the one doing it. And they were taking out the game, of course, frustrated. And I remember coming back afterwards, and the next day I wake up and read the newspaper.
Mm-hmm.
And it said I remember Quincy Wiley did a good job of intimidating us.
Yeah, that's awesome.
And I said, you know what, that's funny to me, because there would never be a time for me as an athlete where I would let someone get me out of my game mentally, and then I would have to come back and talk about it.
You're a very good quarterback at Harrisburg. Did you have any football offers coming out of high school?
Oh, yeah. I was known for a football player first. So my junior year, I was a Gatorade All-American. So I had far more football offers than basketball offers. It wasn't until going into my senior year, I played AAU. And we went to Vegas. Nike won the championship. And that's when everyone realized I wasn't just a football player, because Pennsylvania is known for football throughout the state for the most part.
Yeah.
And Harrisburg area, we always produce great football players, from the Sean McCoys, the Ricky Waters, Jimmy Bryant, you know, the list goes on. And so that's when they were like, well, I know you're really a basketball player, but I was always a basketball player. My dad was a basketball coach coming up through. I grew up in the CYO, so basketball was always my foundation. I just played football as a kid coming up, and you know, a lot of really good athletes did play both sports or two, three sports. So I was just, you know, I was one of those kids as well. I was just I was also a really good quarterback. So one thing I regret, Coach never let me play that Temple. He made sure he ran Ron Dickerson out of his office. He ran the other coach out of the office the next year he came in. He would not let me play for anything. But
yeah,
that's about it. I love Coach, but that one we might have to fight about.
Is it true that you came to Temple for a football visit first, and then you told somebody that you wanted to talk to John Chaney? Is that actually how it played out?
No, John Chaney came to my house on a home visit. Him and Dean Demopoulos were recruiting me. I was being recruited by Temple as a basketball player. Mm-hmm. I just took a football visit to Temple because my cousin, Brandon, was playing football, who was there the year prior from Harrisburg, which is my wide receiver from high school. Mm-hmm. So I took a football visit to be around them and see what the football experience was there then. I knew from the coach's standpoint, because they came to my house on a home visit, Coach Chaney, they came to Harrisburg. So for me, it was just to get the other perspective of the, you know, Temple athletics. And that's why I took a football visit.
Quincy, I cut in with one question here from one of our readers on our message board, Jack Fatica. If you've ever been to a game recently, he's the guy that usually leads the "I believe that we have won" chant. So his question is, he wants to say, first of all, as a side note, Quincy was one of my all-time favorite Temple players. Couple of questions for you. How could you possibly go to a school knowing you had a practice at 5 a.m.? And then on a more serious note, if you had to pick one and only one fellow Temple player to share your backcourt with, who would it be and why?
Why would I knowingly go to where I would practice at 5 a.m.? That's a simple question. That's a no-brainer. Because I was going to learn from one of the best coaches that ever coached the game.
Right.
So whether it was 5 in the morning, 2 in the morning, 10 at night, that's a no-brainer.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yep.
Now, the other question that we'll have, that's a good question. Now, obviously, would be someone that I played with between Lynn Greer and Pepe Sanchez, because they were who I shared a lot of my time with.
Mm-hmm.
In the backcourt, take nothing away from Rasheed Rosenberg, nothing away from Alex Wendy or David Hawkins. They were all great, but it was something unique for me about Pepe Juan Sanchez.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we also came in together
right in
that 92 class, but it's something that I see. As far as the passer, he was the best passer I've ever played with.
Right.
And it was unique for him not coming in, being able to speak the language, and we're not able to have that straight line of direct communication, that we had a nonverbal communication, which was the basketball language. And if you ever really got a chance to pay attention to how me and Pepe played together, there would be a lot of plays that we would make that other guards wouldn't make. Just from reading each other, understanding each other's game, the IQ level. And like I said, being able to do things without being able to speak to someone, because you understand the game of basketball, it was a great time. know, playing together, learning together. And, you know, like I said, with Lynn, me and Lynn played together from when we were in high school. We won that AAU championship together in Las Vegas.
Yeah.
So I got to see the progression of him since he was a year behind me. We were coming in and he was so young. We played AAU. And then, you know, to grow together, say, you know what, see you play in the City League of Philadelphia, you know, and then go on to college and play together and grow into great players, that was a different experience. So those were my two favorite backcourt mates that I had to share with. So that's why I'm going to pick two, because we play three guards. So that answers your question.
There you go. That includes everybody. Keeps
one because it's a three-guard backcourt.
Yep. There you go.
That's how we play. Man.
There you go. You got it. Keep everyone happy. What are your thoughts, Quincy, on Aaron McKee being named the head coach in waiting here at Temple?
For me, it's great news. I'm ecstatic. Fran did a great job and continues to do a great job. But at the same time, we want to keep moving and growing as a university, as a program, and with Aaron being a former player, with having that track record of former NBA player, NBA coach, I think it will give us another opportunity for kids to, you know, want to choose Temple again. Mm-hmm. You know, we were a top-tier program, and people wanted to come to Temple. It wasn't just because you were a Prop 48 and you were a great player.
Mm-hmm.
And McDonald's All-Americans coming through the door. Coming to Temple, top 50 players, top 30, you know, our major program, you know, and kids look at things a little differently now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, those shiny things, I mean, they were attractive enough for some of those things. Now they'll be able to get covered. Well, wow, if this coach can do X, Y, Z, you know, I'm sure he'll be able to help me along the way as well, you know, reach some of those goals. And I just think it's a great time for that. And I hope we'll get a lot more involvement again from, you know, our alumni and former players, because it's always been a brotherhood and a family there. And we got to continue to grow in that direction, because Temple Club has just put out a lot of great players on basketball program. A ton of great players. And I think we need to make sure that we are getting the proper recognition that we deserve it. You know, we did a lot of great things and made a lot of great contributions to, you know, college basketball, what Temple has done, and they place where they stand and wins and the track record and things that have been brought there. And I just think that the credit, you know, we just deserve a little more credit for that.
In your opinion, what does Temple need to do to get the program back to where it was, you know, where you're making deep NCAA tournament runs on a yearly basis?
I think it's a little bit of everything. It's having, of course, you got to have players. You got to have better players. I mean, we have some great players in there now, more continuing to come in. They're developing as they get there, of course, so that helps. Well, like I said, it's bringing that, you know, that package there. I can remember when I came for a basketball game. Trying to remember who we played at that time. But, you know, as a recruit, you come in, you get tickets to the game, you come see the game. And I remember coming, and the former players were there. They were present. They were talking through it. It's a brotherhood through and through. You can see it from year to year. And the support from the guys that graduated, that went on to play professionally, you know, they were in the country. They would come in when they came back. They were playing, you know, professionally here in the NBA. They were, you know, they would be around. So I think it's just continuing to show that. And I think that will bring a lot of attention back to the program, better players into the program, you know, higher caliber players into the program. And all of those things factor in, I think. Because, of course, our campus is turned into something immaculate that when people come into North Philadelphia, they're like, what is this?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, all of these things are starting to factor in that are, you know, that's going to help the basketball program continue to track forward.
Quincy, just a couple more before we let you go, and we really, really appreciate your time. It means a lot. I've talked to some people, and I guess fans naturally assume that once Aaron takes over as the head coach a year from now, everybody says, well, he's bringing the matchup back. And I know teams will blend in some zone looks. Some programs like Syracuse are still doing it. I wanted to ask you what it was like playing in a defense like that that made Temple such a tough out in the tournament. And the second part of that question is, in today's game, could Temple or any program go back to playing the matchup zone, or are shooters too good now, or are they too good to, like, you know, you'd always try to work the ball in the top of the key and then pass out of it? Are players just too good to beat the matchup, or do you still think they could do it?
How's Syracuse doing?
It's pretty good.
Not bad.
Yeah.
Last time I checked, they weren't playing man to man.
Yeah. So your answer is yes, they could do it.
They were there every year at the beginning of our practices, taking notes from Coach Chaney, see if he made any changes.
Yeah.
They're going to derive from that.
Yeah.
So, will it work? Of course, you're saying it works still to this day.
Mm-hmm.
Will Aaron utilize it? Aaron's intelligent.
Mm-hmm.
He knows what works. He ran it. Watched the NBA game the other day in the playoffs. They want the zone for three consecutive plays. Offense didn't know what to do.
Mm-hmm.
Will it still work? Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Discipline, the principles,
mm-hmm.
and the ability to be able to play man-to-man defense.
Mm-hmm.
Our zone wasn't hit by playing a zone.
Mm-hmm.
You had to play man-to-man. That's why it's called a matchup.
Right.
The rotations are a little bit different.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to be very disciplined. You have to be very intelligent. You have to communicate a whole lot.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's going to be a lot of covering. There's a lot of give and take, which is not traditional for certain zones.
Mm-hmm.
Can it be done? 100%.
Mm-hmm.
100%.
Mm-hmm.
And it's something, like I said, when you have man-to-man principles, because any great man-to-man team will look like you're playing a zone.
Right.
Just because of health side and where they are in positioning. So what's that saying? We're playing a matchup zone, which focuses on man-to-man principles. We're still saying the same thing at the end of the day. It looks like zone.
Mm-hmm.
So no question it'll work.
Mm-hmm. One last question for you. This comes from Twitter, from a guy named Varun Kumar. He actually did a pretty good story for us a couple months ago on Lynn Greer, former teammate. Another two-part question for you. Wanted to ask you, number one, what's your best Temple memory? And number two, your best John Chaney story, whether that's on the court, off the court. I know you've got a ton of them. So favorite Temple memory, and then give us a really good, crazy John Chaney story.
Memory, I would probably have to say us beating Michigan State.
Mm-hmm.
I believe they were number one. We were 3 or 4 at that time of the game. I believe we were in the Apollo at that time.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't the Lear Corps Center.
Yep.
And when Pepe hit those free throws and just fell to the floor.
And then eventually got hurt. He got hurt his ankle because somebody trampled him, right?
Yeah, I had to go get him out the pile, trust me. It was funny.
Yeah.
But I remember one, there was time on the clock.
Yeah.
Why did you just fall like him?
Yeah. Yep.
But, I mean, it was funny from a great experience, a joyful experience to go out, you know. Of course, the court bang storm, but it wasn't just the court. It was the entire Broad Street,
uh-huh.
you know, on the North Philadelphia side. And it was really a great time on campus for families and just for the school in general.
Uh-huh.
So that to me was very, very special.
Uh-huh.
Of course, you see, I got a lot of, I got multiple stories on my two backcourt mates. I picked to hit free throws with no time on the clock, right?
Yeah.
And then it's a Coach Chaney story that I can use. How about that?
Yeah, because there's probably some you can't use.
Plenty of funny ones. I would love to use the other one, trust me. But for this one here, I'm going to use the same Bonaventure game.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody knows the infamous cookie story that was online.
Yep.
Well, St. Bonaventure Catholic University, of course, you know, I'm born and raised Catholic, you know, certain things that I understand. And for us to be at St. Bonaventure University, and it was always, for it to be a Catholic university, the environment was always hostile at St. Bonaventure.
Yep.
Believe it or not, St. Bonaventure was hostile. It was more hostile than going to Cincinnati and playing the Bearcats.
Uh-huh.
This is the truth. This is Kane Bonaventure. Uh-huh. And so we always had great games up there, competitive. They had great players. Caswell, Cyrus, Tim Wynn, you know, Mitchell was all the players who went to NBA. So I had just finished kick of the game, and I sit down to get some water. Next thing you know, I see something fly past me. Boom! So I don't even know, because someone's trying to hit me, someone's trying to hit Coach. Boom, it's the floor, right for the coach. Coach picks it up. Someone hit me with a cookie, walked out, slips in the court, slams the cookie down, and starts to holler at the referees, points at the priest in the front row. This is the school. For me, that was, you know, one of the funniest stories, because that was like live in game. I'm like, we're focused on basketball. We're in the middle of the later part of the season. We're, you know, progressing towards gearing up. And we're in the middle of a cookie battle.
Yeah.
At St. Bonaventure.
Yep.
So that was a great story, but I remember that. And it just went on and on about the cookie. I said, Coach, he didn't even get hit with the cookie.
Well, he wanted to make an example.
You're so intense and so intuitive was going on. You wouldn't even realize if a cookie hit you in the course of a game.
Yeah, it was always that was always a hostile trip, right? You know, probably one of your least favorite road trips, right? You guys would have to stay in Olean and some probably dumpy motel, and he was probably in a bad mood anyway, right?
Everything about that trip just set you up for the hostile environment.
Mm-hmm.
Everything about it, you know, way of speed, it's cold, ton of snow. You know, it just seems like everything's isolated, and then you get there and everybody's on top of you yelling, you're like, this is the Catholic school. Mm-hmm. I just heard the bells.
Yeah.
But that was a funny story, man. But there's plenty of them, man. Some coach, a great one, the hilarious. Yeah, story that he would open up the season with every year, just to tell the new players all the time that would come in. We share the same story every year. So yeah, coach was definitely special. That time for me was, I wouldn't trade it for anything.
Quincy, this was great. Thanks so much for joining us. Best of luck to you. Hopefully we can do this again soon and catch up soon. Best of luck to you with everything you're doing down there at ISBA and teaching and being a dean. And we'll talk to you soon. Thanks again. Really appreciate it.
Thank you, guys. And I appreciate everything you guys are doing, man. And like I said, we're doing great things at Temple, man. So we'll keep doing them. Appreciate it, folks.
Cool. Thanks, Quincy. Really appreciate it, man.
Yeah.
It's now time for our sometimes serious and sometimes silly mailbag. We appreciate all the questions on Twitter and on the message boards. First question comes from Philly Bully on Twitter. Who's more likely, Isaiah Brockington or James Scott?
Well, we know the answer to that now. Yeah, they got James Scott. And again, we talked about Brockington in an earlier segment on the show here. So we'll see. Does Scott cancel out Brockington? Does he not? We'll know in maybe the coming days and next week or so. But obviously that question came in not long before we got news of Scott committing. So we know the answer to that one now, and then we'll keep everyone updated on what we hear about Brockington.
Next question comes from Real Getsky on Twitter. Any interesting matchup battles to look out for that really capture your eyes with summer coming into play that could significantly improve us? I would assume he's talking about football.
Yes, he is. So what do you think, Matt? What do you think, Dalton?
Well, I'll be interested. I think I said this last week, but I'll go back to it. The safety position, we know Delvon Randle, he was an all-league safety last season, but, I mean, who will fill that role? Who will fill the void that's left by Sean Chandler's departure? I'm not quite sure who's going to be that guy. Kevon Bruton, his name has come up a whole lot this spring, and usually that's a good sign when a guy is brought up as much as he's been brought up. But, you know, we'll see. Benny Walls, he's a guy that was pretty highly recruited out of South Jersey by some big schools like Boston College and Rutgers, so he'll be in the mix there. And then, you know, you have all the freshmen who are going to come in June. So that's an interesting one for me, the safety spot, and who's going to play next to Delvon Randle, and then also the defensive end position. They need pass rushers, especially after losing Jacob Martin and Sharif Finch. Mm-hmm. So besides, you know, beyond Quincy Roche, who had a lot of production last season, there's not really a proven commodity there. I think they like Dane Levine. They like some of their younger guys like Arnold Ibikiti, but they don't have many proven guys at that position. So at defensive end, I'm really going to be looking there to see who kind of blossoms and who steps up in August when training camp rolls around.
Yeah, it might sound like, well, maybe it's not an obvious one. And I might have said this last week. I still want to see how the quarterback competition plays out. Is Frank the likely starter? Yeah, but I want to see how an improved Anthony Russo pushes him. Would they prefer to redshirt Trav Betty? Yes, but he's here. He's here early. He sounds like and looks like initially the quarterback of the future for them. He looks the part. He acts the part. What if, you know, again, I don't think they're going to start him in the opener, but what will that bring out of Frank Neuteil? And again, I'm not looking for this to happen, but if, you know, if they see enough of Russo, if they see enough of Trav Betty or Todd Senteo, and if Frank does falter and he takes a step back, again, I'm not saying I'm rooting for the kid to do this or that he definitely will, but how will that affect his game? How will that affect the decisions that the coaching staff makes? And then at running back, if David Hood is indeed a legit candidate to never play football again, you know, what do we see at running back from Jagger Gardner? What do we see from Tylee Grainer? Can they get anything out of the freshman and Kyle Dobbins coming in? If he comes in and makes an impact. So those are, I mean, those will be a couple other position battles to watch. Maybe one of the tackle positions. But I think it's going to be a fun camp to cover. You know, they've got a lot of talent coming back. That safety position, as Matt said, will be a big one just because of not just the coaches, but again, you just ask the players, general open-ended question, who looked good. And a lot of people said Kevon Bruton. So if he's as good as advertised, then they could really be good at the back end of the defense there.
Next question comes from Bud Knapp on Twitter. My question pertains to none of that. What is Matt Vender's favorite Meek Mill song? What is John DeCarlo's least favorite Pitbull song? Sup, Kyle Gauss. Well, Kyle isn't even here, so.
I was on a flight back from Wisconsin, right, for his full-time job. So
hopefully he brings us some cheeseburgers, though.
Yeah, yeah, or some cheese curds. Matt, favorite Meek Mill?
I guess I got to go with Dreams and Nightmares. That's the one. I think that's the one we hear the most.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'll go with that one.
Yeah.
Appreciate the question, bud.
Yeah. My least favorite Pitbull song? I couldn't tell you five Pitbull songs. I appreciate what the guy did for Puerto Rico. I'm sure he's a nice humanitarian. His music just drives me nuts. I can't take it. So pick one. It's probably my least favorite. I doubt that you could play a Pitbull song for me, and I would just sit there and say, oh, wow, this one's different. A little deep track from the catalog, Pitbull, and no.
I'm sorry to cut you off. He performed at the Eagles-Cowboys game on Thanksgiving,
yes,
like 3 years ago.
Yeah.
That was my realization that, like, oh, my God, this guy is really
That also
terrible.
Doesn't help. So, yeah, probably a quality human being, but no. Pick one, bud. If you pick a song for me, it's my least favorite Pitbull song.
Next question comes from Andy Katz on Twitter. Quincy Wadley was one of my favorite all-time players. What is he up to these days? He kind of talked about that
Listen to the podcast, and well, by now, if he's listening to everything he's got in the mailbag, he knows exactly what Quincy's up to.
Next question comes from JC Fatika on the message boards. He had some questions for Quincy as well. His question here, not trying to beat a dead horse here, can I even say that anymore? In all seriousness, what have you heard and or why do you think they set up this coach-in-waiting scenario? It just seems messy. No real positives to come out of it. Of course, money could be the reason. Just struggling to make logical sense of it.
Again, I just think it was a compromise. There were a lot of people involved in the decision. Dick Englert. The official release, right, said Dick Englert made the decision with input from, you know, the trustees and Pat Kraft. We know that Kevin Clark was heavily involved in the decision, the former athletic director, chief operating officer. I'm not saying that people have to like it. I don't disagree. Probably with all due respect to Fran, again, I've said it before, I know it probably sounds like a disclaimer, the guy's never been anything but great to me. But yeah, you probably either want to make an all or nothing proposition, let the guy coach out the rest of his contract, which probably wasn't going to fly, or just make the clean break now and let Aaron build his staff. But you have this coaching waiting scenario. Some people think from the outside looking in, it looks like the classy thing to do. But I think it's the byproduct of, you know, why did it happen? Because you had a lot of minds in the room. And I know the president has such deference and such care for Fran Dunphy. And maybe Dick Englert thought this was the best way to go. So, again, I think it happened because there were just a lot of people involved. And maybe this was the compromise. It could be messy if it really backfires with recruiting. As we talked about earlier, You go out, you make James Scott a priority as a transfer, you get him. You get him over Virginia Tech, you get him over Dayton, some teams that have been to the tournament more recently than you, have had more success than you have recently. So that's a good sign. And as I said earlier, when James Scott's talking to someone like Matt and he says, well, I've been talking primarily to Aaron McKee and Chris Clark, I really haven't talked to Coach Dunphy. I hate to say it, but again, that's what you want to hear, that Aaron's the face of the program. So far, so good. Now, again, they got to make a dent in 2019 and 2020. You know, could money be the reason with the buyout? Maybe. He's struggling to make logical sense out of it. Completely get that, Jack. But, if Aaron goes out and gets a couple of 2019 kids and they create some buzz, I think it will definitely take the edge off of things. So you'll say, okay, Aaron has now created some buzz. He really has changed the game a little bit with recruiting. And obviously, if they go out, we talked about this last week. You know, some people are saying that this season is an impending disaster. Maybe, but it's not like Fran Dunphy and Aaron McKee have never coached together before. And if they go out and you see that guys like J.P. Moorman, Dre Perry, Nate Pierre-Louis, if they play tougher, if they're more physical, I realize I'm starting to describe a football player now, but if they go out and take ownership of the program and there's more consistency and they go out and have a really good year, then everybody will look back on this and say, boy, it was a really graceful, you know, transition of power. But I get it, completely get it. It could be awkward. It could be set up to be a little sketchy temporarily, but again, I think it was a compromise. A lot of people were involved, and now we see how it works out. Again, so far so good with James Scott. Let's see if they can, and there's our next message board question, or next mailbag question. Can they get a Dante Scott? Can they get a Demir Bishop? Can they get some of these other guys in 2019? If Aaron proves that he can lead the charge there, then I think that's going to really take the edge off.
Last question comes from Esther Boyer on the message boards. How good can Dante Scott be? Is he a real difference maker?
Yeah, I mean, I think he is a difference maker. I think he's a four-star prospect on Rivals. And, I know we don't always put a whole lot of stock in the stars, but this is a kid who, by all means, paired with Demir Bishop at Imhotep, that would be, you know, a really good get for Temple if they could get both of those guys or even just one of those guys. But I do think Dante Scott is one of those difference-making 2019 guys. I know we've heard a lot about the 2019 class. The 2020 class is also very good. A guy like Mikael Jones from Girard College is certainly going to be one of the top players in the city, and a guy Temple should be all over already right now. But, Dante Scott, certainly a guy that the Temple is on hard, and you know, I think he'd have a chance to be a difference maker if he does come to Temple.
Yeah, well, hopefully, if all goes according to plan, we're going to have Del Greco Wilson in here, who's a guy who runs a website and a blog called Black Cager Sports, and is really tied in with a lot of the local high school coaches, a lot of the AAU coaches, and he's posted some quotes from, you know, from some of the local coaches, from a guy like Andre Noble at Imhotep, and the reaction to Aaron so far has been positive. And we'll look forward to talking to Dell next week and getting his take on it and saying, hey, is Temple now more of a competitor for these guys? And again, if Aaron moves the needle on that and they can get a guy like Dante Scott, I've yet to see him play live. I've heard he's a three. If you get him, Demir Bishop, you get a couple guys out of Imhotep, out of the city, when you really haven't gotten a true city kid in a while. I mean, Shiz is from Philly. Mm-hmm. I'm out of Haverford School. If you can get him, you get him, great. But yeah, all indications are that he is a difference maker, and if you can, as Matt said, you can get him and a couple of Imhotep guys or any of these guys out of the city, Seth Lundy, then people are really going to be charged up about this move and about this transition.
So that's going to do it for us this week. We appreciate all the questions on Twitter and on the message boards. We also appreciate Quincy Wadley taking a good bit of time out of his schedule to talk to us. Next week will be my finale here with HowlScoop.com. Will be a very bittersweet event, but it'll be
bring
a very
some tissues.
Yeah, and maybe not, but we'll have a good time. Kyle will be back, and we'll post those mailbag questions. And if you're listening to this right now, think of a question you may want to ask me, because it'll be my last time on the Scoop. So anything, almost everything is up for grabs here.
Why are you allergic to dogs?
Yeah. Any question you want to ask me about my future, anything just about me in general, I'll be happy to answer them. So until next week, we'll talk to you then, and thanks for listening.